Welcome back to Success Made to Last. I'm Rick Tokini. Hey, this is our Legends show, and we're so glad to have on today Finbar O'Hanlon. He's a British-born, Australian-raised digital media technologist, and he's also an entrepreneur, musician, a futurist. I happen to read his blog all the time, and here's evidence of it. I printed it out today so I can look at the most recent one. But on top of that, he is a guitarist, a music composer, arranger, producer, visionary, futurist, maybe one of the few polymaths I've had on my show. And I've had 3,000 people on before, Finbar. So great to have you on. Welcome to Success Made to Last, Legends.
Thanks, Rick. It's absolutely fabulous to be here.
Okay, so I didn't do justice for everything that you've done in your career. So tell us about your backstory, starting with where you were born and how did you catch the music bug?
I was born in Liverpool in the UK many, many years ago. We emigrated to Australia. It was at a time when Australia was taking a lot of English sort of, I guess you would call it talent. It was in the early days of Australia, sort of really looking for skilled labour coming over. So my father and mother came over to Australia, you know, and I was an English kid with a Liverpool accent, and I was always a bit weird. So with a name like Finbar and with a Liverpool, someone that talks like they're from Liverpool, it was I was very much a stranger in a strange land. And the interesting thing was, being a kid, just like a lot of people that listen to this show, you know, being young and being teased and being different, it could have gone two ways. One, I could have been really closed into myself, or I embraced it. And I did the latter. I started to just, I liked being teased, and it sort of built a hard shell around me. But what it did was, I loved being insular and just sitting in my room. I've never been into sport. I realized that early. I just didn't like competing against anyone else. I liked competing against myself. And, you know, my parents were going crazy because I didn't like sport. I was this weird kid who was, back then, I think they labeled me hyperactive. So my mum and dad got me a guitar, and I just buried myself into my room with myself and started to just develop this thing, and took on the challenge and the discovery and the process of falling down and getting back up and trying this again and getting it wrong and watching the progress. And I just love that. And so my whole, it sort of set me up for life as this constant evolution and challenge and game with myself. So it's this thing where when I leave, achieve a certain level of competence with something, I like to move on and just keep doing something else. But music has kept me cemented and rooted towards something that I've had a passion my whole life for.
Beautiful. You just gave the definition of a polymath, which is when someone achieves a certain level of mastery, then they move on to become a master of something else. And that is, so that's really cool that you said that. Okay, so I've been to Liverpool umpteen times, and I can basically give the magical mystery tour to any visitor going to the city. So I got to ask you, what was the first Beatles song that you ever played on guitar?
Let It Be.
Of course you did.
Of course.
Of course.
I still remember getting the Beatles guitar book, and it was sort of like, my father said to me, son, you've got to play this guitar until your fingers bleed. And so I went, okay. I took it literally. So I practiced until my fingers bled, and I went out and showed my dad my fingers, and he was just like, geez, I didn't mean till your fingers bled. And I thought, oh, well that's what you do, right? Because, you know, I don't know. There wasn't any YouTube back then. There wasn't any of this sort of stuff. So it was Let It Bleed with fingers bleeding.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, so you state a quote on your website that I have now requoted umpteen times. It says, talent hits a target no one else can hit. Genius hits a target no one else can see. Who taught you that, and what does that mean to you today?
You know, I love philosophers, and I love some of these old quotes, but it's a quote that stuck with me because my whole life, everything I've done, 9 times out of 10, no one's understood me. I thought I'm some sort of crazy psycho. And it's really interesting because when I dug into that, it was, what is the definition of, it's called the word difference between psycho and genius. And I'm talking about psycho in a positive terms, not in a negative terms, just for the language translation here. And it's often the difference is only someone else's understanding. It's not that I've changed anything. So there's been times in my life where I've been doing something. People are saying, what are you doing? That is ridiculous. One of the technologies most of the technologies I invent, people just go, what are you doing? That makes no sense. I don't understand. And they would leave going, this guy's a psycho. This guy's completely insane. And then 2 months later, they'd come to me and they go, you're a genius. Mm-hmm. And I go, well, I'm neither. It's just your understanding of what I'm doing. I haven't changed. And, you know, it was a fascinating revelation for me. So when I saw that quote, you know, this concept of what people call genius and how they label metadata against certain things, it's often, you know, people say you're talented because they can understand what you're doing. But genius is often a starting point where, you know, you're looking to hit goals that other people can't see. And it's always been a challenge for me of like, how do I look? How do I explore? How do I keep that young mind, that exploration? How do I keep challenging things and looking for the cracks? So the things come to the surface that other people can't see. And for when they can't see them, when they start criticizing me, it's typically a great sign that I'm onto something.
Mm. Thank you for that. In a recent blog that you wrote, it was about the ecosystem of platforms. And I've read it three times now, trying to get out your recipe for creativity. So to that end about being a genius, mm-hmm. It hits a target no one else can see. Share with us, how do you see those cracks? And what is your recipe for creativity?
Well, look, I did a TED Talk, and it's called The Complexity of Simplicity. And in that TED Talk, I actually stepped through a number of different processes that people can use. It's more a guidebook per se of how I set myself up for that. But I'll share some of them with you. And there's a reason my talk is called The Complexity of Simplicity. And it's to be creative and get ourselves into that sort of mindset. A lot of it is, how do we unwind the stuff that's going on us that's challenging on a daily basis? And so, look, we're surrounded by millions of channels of communication, most telling us to do something or act in a certain way. And we haven't been taught as humans the ability to filter information really well. We have spam filters on our email. We have other things that can actually help get advertising out of our way. But what about information? How do we get information out of our way? What are the tools that we've been taught to figure out what is our life journey? How do we discover that? And how do we start to filter and curate information around us? Now, we might think that we do that by we select certain information and we've got certain people like yourself that we gravitate towards because we know that person has a good message and that, but that's one part of your day. It's a jigsaw puzzle, whereas 10 other thousand pieces of information that it might be subliminal, the advertising on the buses. So what I do is I start with trying to learn the process of clearing information out of my path so I can discover. It's very, how often can you find, if you go into a house that's full of rubbish, how hard is it to find something in that house when it's full of garbage? When you've cleaned out the garbage, so it's a lot easier to see the things around you because it's not full of rubbish. So for me, the simplest analogy is, what are the tools that I can work on to get rid of the rubbish out of the rubbish tip of my mind? And so every day it's being filled up with some good information, but 99% of it rubbish. And so what I did was I used a process on myself, which I've mentored a lot of people through, and it's a binary process, which is starting to train your brain to label information as zeros and ones. It's a very, very simple tool. And this is all you have to do. You start to become aware of information. So you watch a morning show on television. Every piece of news story, is it a zero or a one? A zero is information that you have zero ability to affect the outcome of. So a plane crashed in Kuwait. Can I change that? Is there anything I can do personally to actually alter that news story? And if it's no, then it's a zero. One is any information that comes into my mind that I can use in a way that is positive, so I can affect the outcome of. And that's a one. Okay. And what happens is it's like going to the gym. At first, it's really hard. You're going, oh, is that a zero? Is that a one? But what happens is you become so fast. This happens in milliseconds. And you become aware by doing this without doing anything else, you start to become aware of information around you and the amount of different sort of messages that are coming to you, stuff that you weren't even aware of before. And just by doing this, without by doing anything else, you start to attune yourself to being able to filter information because you're already filtering it as zeros and ones. Then you start asking the question by doing this, what comes out of that is you start asking the question, well, actually, what am I watching all this stuff that I can't affect the outcome of? How is it serving me to be the best version of myself? And it's really fascinating. And then you start looking at other people talking about stuff, royal families in crisis, whatever it is, stuff that actually you cannot affect the outcome of. And once you start to unload on that, you now have space in your life. And when you have space in your life, you can start exploring again. When you start exploring, you start finding the cracks.
Wow. That's going to shake a few people up. I may have to play that over and over again to shake myself up, for starters. And it's what you just said was so clarifying. It's almost this purging process of purging all that stuff and just don't even listen to it. And you just answer the question why content is so irrelevant on television today. People cannot
100%.
It is so irrelevant. I was just talking to my friend John here about this, and no wonder. And we're just feeding garbage to the masses, and maybe they're putting a classification of zero on it versus a one because they can't use that information. It's nonsense. It's what the television network.
Well, the other thing is that I find fascinating. I find absolutely fascinating is the more you do this, the more you start to realize that this information is not there to serve me. It's there to serve them. Mm-hmm. Okay. It is there to make sense. It's about creating eyeballs. They're a marketing entertainment property and their job is to get you glued and be sidetracked about some drama that you've got absolutely no relevance to your life. Yet as soon as you do that, you start to realize you're being puppeted. And it's not being a conspiracy theory. It's just about you're hijacking your ability in your own life to figure out who you are. I would say to people, I'm not saying everyone do this. This is becomes relevant when you start to figure out in your own life that you're not being the best version of yourself or there's something missing. This is when you can start to look at a tool like this. You don't have to do it. But for me, it's been something I've been developing my whole life. And, you know, I've achieved an amazing life. I've traveled the world. I've done stuff that most people blow their minds. And they ask me what I do. And I say to people, I've worked hard my whole life to be indescribable. And it blows their minds because they're like, they want to describe you.
Mm. Yeah. And you make me think about what we do here at Success Made to Last. We're trying to focus on best version. And all we do is we curate stories from individuals like you. However, you are definitely one of a kind. And maybe we do it because we're trying to grasp onto great stories that other people can relate to and help themselves become their best version. So it's this quest that we're on.
You're obviously doing a great job. It's exactly.
Well, we got you on at 7 o'clock in the morning in Australia. So that's a big deal.
I love talking about this stuff.
When I have individuals like you on who have done so many things in their life, I'm trying to dig down and get out little kernels of information so people can understand you. And I noticed that you were with the band Stereo Connects, and this was 14 years ago, I think. And
2006.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. We've been studying bands and what makes bands click. And so while it's tangential to what we were just talking about is a really important topic to us, we want to know this. What did you learn about the importance of a chemistry within a band and the importance of leaving your ego at the doorstep to be a part of a successful band?
Wow, what a great question. So chemistry is, to me, is it's an energy, and it's something that is, for me personally, if I'm closed off, I'm going to try and make this sound simple. When I'm always trying to work on a process of relearning, rethinking. And so it's when my ego gets in the way, I start becoming in preacher mode or prosecutor mode. I'm telling someone else my own, well, this is how it is, or I'm so great, or so I'm basically a preacher of my own ego, or I'm a prosecutor where I'll challenge other people's beliefs. And so what I first do when I'm like Stereochemics had John Otto from Limp Bizkit, DJ Apocalypse from New York, people from all over the world came into Los Angeles to set this band up, and people had been in very big bands and toured all over the place. And so everyone had a big ego. Everyone's done all this amazing work. And so we came together as this mad collective of guitar player, producer, a rapper, a drummer in one of the world's biggest bands, you know, and just different styles clashed together. And so we all got together and didn't play music. We just got together and we went out and we partied and we hung out together before we even, I flew in from Paris. I was living in Paris at the time, and we flew in and we just hung out and we just got to see whether there was a chemistry there. And we developed that chemistry before we even walked into the studio. Mm. I guess that was from being in many different bands, from recording and touring and playing. And we'd all reached that point of our lives where, hey, let's just hang out and see if we like each other. And, you know, that sort of dispelled the ego. It sort of built a teamwork bond rather than just let's get together and now be a band with a record label that's trying to promote us. It was just I don't know, we just came at it from a different viewpoint, really.
Mm. That's a lovely story. It makes me wonder if your time as a psychoacoustic audio engineer, those skills and those sounds that were in your ear went into the band Stereochemics.
One thing the listeners need to understand about me is I am completely a mad scientist. Like on one side of things, I talk like this and I try and translate this craziness in my mind that's like zeros and ones and binary and technology and cryptography. And, you know, I talk about the most technical stuff that will just make everyone go to sleep. But, you know, psychoacoustics is I'll try to put it in a simple language, is the ability to manipulate sound frequencies in such a way that we create auditory and non-auditory sort of results. And so, you know, I work with Ahmet Zappa, my business partner, on this new technology we've patented, which is how do we calibrate sound in music mixes where we actually drive intended emotion. And so we've done some trials with police in holding cells around trying to calm down prisoners. We've done stuff for troops in battlefields around PTSD, where they can listen to their normal music and we recalibrate the sound frequencies. And, you know, I started this on a journey where I worked for IBM on this surround system out of two speakers, and I applied some of it to the Stereochemics stuff, but then I really wrapped up the development of this technology with Ahmet. And obviously Ahmet, his dad, Frank Zappa, you know, has long pedigree of pushing, you know, sounds and boundaries around sound. You know, we believe, I'm very passionate about the about sound frequencies and how they can affect the human physiology, mm-hmm. for a human performance element, blah blah blah. So, you know, when we talk about these labels, you know, yeah, I'm psychoacoustic engineer, but for me, it's people go to me, how did you become a psychoacoustics engineer on one hand, then how did you build a video technology that does real-time on-the-fly video production editing without rendering, then how do you become a musician? For me, it's just these are labels that people can't fathom how I can do these different things. But they're all the same thing. They're all solving problems, and they're all solving problems through exploration. And you know, I learned as I got older that these technical things that I do are there to actually solve a problem. And so part of my process is a real design thinking, trying to understand deep and wide around where the value is created, and then what are the pieces, the jigsaw puzzle pieces I need to assemble in order to solve that problem. So That was a long-winded way around trying to answer your question, Rick. But, you know, with Stereochemics, it was at the time, how do we infuse all of these different things, these spices into this soup to create something that at the time was quite unique? And we were really happy with the result. You know, we hung out for 3 weeks in LA, recorded a whole album. It was a great, fun time.
Mm. I feel like that after 35 years in brand management that I've been around a bunch of pretenders, and you're the real deal. Because when I was on the Doritos brand group, some sound company tried to sell us on what was the sound of Doritos without really understanding how that sound frequency could be changed to actually make people eat more Doritos. They were trying to sell us a jingle versus what you're talking about. And it's almost like there's the cheap way of approaching sound and sonic branding, and then there's you.
Well, it's just, you know, for me, I get that people have a business. I understand it. And I know that they're trying to productize things, and I know they're trying to sell them. And that's great. And there's nothing wrong with that. But to your point, what I'm looking for is the deeper connection between sound and emotion. And through that, products can be built on that. But rather than building a product trying to sell that, I'm trying to look at the connection first, and then what other products that can be built around that. And unfortunately, I find, and fortunately or unfortunately, in today's times, we're so busy getting the product and how fast we can get it to market. And I get that there's a commercial directive on everything I do innovative wise, but it has to start with, where is the real problem? Where is the deeper issue here? Like, for example, when we started to talk about, and I'm not going to try and blow everyone's minds, but there's a reason guitars have frets and keyboards have keys. And each one of those notes is designed mathematically so they play in tune with each other. The problem is each one of those notes on a musical scale is disharmonious to the human physiology. So once you start working out what the tuning should be for each note, then the premise is, could we make music more effective in health, science, spirituality, connected brands, whatever that is? But it takes work and time to actually develop that. And I don't know if this company, a lot of the stuff I do, Rick, is so airy fairy people. They go, that's just ridiculous. But that's the concept. Well, you asked me earlier about genius hits a target that no one else can see. It's when you land that, then you can build the products around it. Then everyone goes, that is game changing. But you have to start from a different place.
Mm, you do. It's almost as if you were my percussion kit and you said, let's create a whole new sound. So let's just take your snare drum over here and blow it up. And let's not even have a box to think within. Let's have a brand new paradigm. And you can create this new percussive sound from anywhere in the world. What would you do? And so it would kill the people at Ludwig and DK. But on the other hand, we would have created a whole new sound because we took a mad scientist approach to being a percussionist.
Yeah, well, I would start asking the question, why is a snare drum a snare drum? Mm-hmm. What is the sound it makes in context to the whole kit? And then imagine, let's not get rid of the snare drum. How could we reimagine something else that fits in that sonic field that creates another beat, another, where does that cut through? What would we create? So I would say to the Ludwigs of the world, you've got all this incredible knowledge and don't stop what you're doing. But what would it look like if you could take the knowledge you have with a mindset to, is there space to create something new? Like, why is it that drums have been the same for so long? Like, for example, if you think about a snare drum with the snare wire underneath it, that would have been a radical concept when it was first developed. Why would you attach a set of wires underneath the drum? It creates a sound. That was an innovation at its time.
That's right. Well,
what would it look like if X, Y, and Z, you know, the drums were tuned on the fly so they resonated with human physiology, for example? It could be a tuning system for a snare drum. Who knows? Why do drummers constantly tuning their drums? You know, so these are questions around value-based questions that start the discovery process, not by going, oh, we've got the best drum. It's about how might we make a drum that really changes the heart chakra? Who's thought about that? What is the heart chakra? How do you actually, you know what I mean? Everyone knows can feel bottom end. How do you feel a snare drum rather than hear it? Now, you ask these weird questions, but, you know, I remember sitting in New York when I was living in Manhattan, and I'd ask a friend, how come there's so many yellow cabs in New York? I just ask questions. I'm the kid, the annoying kid. And, you know, I did some research, and it was just like, it was such a simple answer. But, you know, the funny thing is, by asking the dumb questions, not the smart questions, is often where you find the cracks. Mm-hmm.
Very good. So I want to tell you a quick story, and I want to get your comment on it. I interviewed Steve Sassoon, who was the inventor at Eastman Kodak of digital photography, and I wanted him to replay for me why Eastman Kodak failed to pick up his idea. And I finally got out of him, Finbar, that it was the fear of upper management that digital photography would take down the big machine called Eastman Kodak. So when it comes to that, I want you to comment, how much of this is fear that people can't reimagine a new future, whatever it is, music, technology, whatever. How much is fear driving this?
Yeah, without being generalistic, I think it drives everything. But what I teach large organizations, I call it the power of different framework. And so I teach them how to associate the change and the understanding of change with I wrap it up in fear on purpose. So let me try and explain that. Put it through a company lens to try and make sense of it. So I go to a board and I say to them, tell me the top three companies that might disrupt you in the next 30, 60 or 90 days. And they all look at me with blank faces. Well, if you can't answer that, how are you making informed decisions on protecting shareholder value or driving revenue on your business when you could be taking that tomorrow? You don't have enough capability in your decision-making matrix to be able to make an informed decision because you've got no idea who's coming out, what new technologies might totally derail your business. And so what I try and teach them is that innovation isn't something that's nice and, oh, yeah, we'll throw that over the side, or it's not something that you just think, oh, look, it's a costly exercise. It's absolutely critical for you to have people in your organization who can look ahead of the curve, who can see what's going on, who can sort of help you adapt. Now, if Kodak had an advisory subcommittee that was advising the board with evidence-based, with frameworks around understanding, the company wouldn't look at it as, oh, well, look, we're scared of change. They would be scared not to, because they would understand the impacts that not making a decision would have. And so people think not making a decision is the best way to do something, but they don't factor into the equation that not making a decision is a decision and it has ramifications. And so what I try to do when it comes to people's personal lives, the fear is only being driven because they haven't been taught the skills to understand how to use fear as a tool. They think fear is something bad rather than something amazing. Fear is like the times that we change in our life are the fundamental changes when we're in fear, because we have to do something. And so we get scared of that rather than embracing that. And so but we just haven't been taught as humans. We go to this thing called school and we learn these things like geography and stuff that we leave school and we just forget about. But there are tools like learning how to understand emotions, learning how to build connection, learning how to, you know, to cooperate, how to actually, you know, work together, you know, how to think differently. These are the soft skills, the emotional intelligence that we need to be talking about and teaching and starting to explore, because these are things that unlock the value in people's lives. Being different is the most powerful hack anyone can use in their life to get massive advantage, because you're standing out from the pack. You've just got to be able to have the strength to weather it when people start criticizing you. As long as you know it's inherently right, if you can stand through that first, it's like breaking through a glass ceiling. Everyone's pushing back on you because society says, that makes no sense, that makes no sense, you're crazy, you're mad. As soon as you push through, if you've got the gumption to push through, then everyone's like, how does it do that? How do you be like that? It's amazing. I'd like to be like that. But because we're so trapped into, we bury ourselves down with responsibility. I've got this house, this car loan, this, and this. I can't possibly do that. You can do anything you want. The problem is you've just got to have the guts to be able to go, I need to change something in my life. And if I don't do it, I'm going to continually be in this point. And it's typically a pain point that helps us make that decision. So that pain point is something to be celebrated, not run away from.
Wow. That's one of the greatest pieces of information I think I've ever heard. And I, you know, out of respect for your time today, I'm going to just put one final question on you, and it's related to being a polymath. I've read that Albert Einstein, when he would try to solve a mathematical problem, would go and play his violin, which he was also a master at, as well as a mathematician. Give us an example of how you've used the different domains that you've mastered to help problem solving in another one that's totally different. So how's all that being a master helped you to be a better person in general?
Rick, what an unbelievable question. That is one of the best questions I've ever had in any interview I've ever done. So thank you for that. So, and I'm so passionate about answering that. The different life experiences help you see through a different lens. And so one of the tools I teach people, I call them parallel universe strategies. Okay. And so let me give you a playback on a strategy around for a law firm. Okay. Because it's probably the easiest way to explain it. A law firm comes to me and says, Finn, we have a major problem in the fact that people are downloading contracts, small to medium enterprise, from the internet and just filling them out themselves. And we've lost this massive amount of business. Okay. Because people are just downloading contracts from the internet. How do we fix it? So I said, okay, cool. I need you to think about yourself as a navigation system in a car. And they looked at me as if I was insane. I said, so let's map this out. What does a navigation system in a car do? Does it get you from A to B? Yes. Does it reroute you if the traffic gets congested? Yes. Does it have ATMs, car parks? Yes. Okay, stop. As a law firm, do you help a business get from A to B? Yes. Do you reroute the business decision based on changing law? Yes. Do you have relationships with accountants? Blah, blah, blah. Yes. And they're like, I'm starting to get this, right? So now you're thinking about it through this lens. Now I'm going to make it simpler. Tell me what law is. And they went, now this is what I call the simple questions that are hard to answer. Oh, well, law is, it's a set of rules that, you know, you need to abide by. Okay, cool. Don't tell me what you do. Tell me the value you create. And they went, well, we provide law. And I go, no, you're telling me what you do. And so I had to help them. I said, the value you create is you ensure a business doesn't get sued and is compliant, right? Yes. Okay. So tell me why you're not an insurance company. And they went, what do you mean? I said, well, the value you create, it's not about law. It's about the value you create. You ensure a business is protected. Yes. Okay. So why don't you bill as an insurance company? And they went, what do you mean? So I said, spoke to small to medium enterprise, charge them $500 a month, just like your insurance. You get all the contracts you want. They're all based under current law. Everyone loves you now. They don't think you're ripping them off all the time. Your contracts are sitting in a technology system. You don't have to do any work anyway. You just pull them out. You just know they're current. Right. And now you're seen through a lens of you're providing value again rather than ripping them off. Now, they implemented that, and they got back a major portion of their small to medium enterprise contract law. And that was through looking at a different world. So when I'm solving problems, I often don't look at I often remove my thought process around, am I a musician? I go, okay, what other things in other worlds can actually relate? And I go wide and deep. So I pick out something so random that's so different and try and look for the patterns. And the more you do it, the faster you get, and the more and it just builds this cognitive awareness to be able to match patterns.
Wow. And that's a brain on fire, because you're connecting all the dots. You're aligning yourself with your past experience. You're using the wisdom that you've gained through all the things that you've done in your life.
And all the listeners, right? Like, if you like horses and you like banjos and you like barbecue, do them all. You're going to learn something from them. Don't go, oh, that's not relevant to me. You know, like, experience life, be a kid again, explore, you know? Like, I'm not a doctor, but like the amount of people I've mentored that are depressed, and I'm like, tell me the one thing you've actually experienced that's different in the last week, anything. And they can't tell me. And I go, the last month, something you've done different. just by, even if you try a different bread, even if you try a different route, just being aware of you doing something different is a starting process on that journey.
Fantastic. Listen, I thank you so much for being on today. I have grown personally from listening to you.
Thank you.
And where can our listeners find out more about you and follow your blog and keep up with everything associated with Finbar O'Hanlon?
Well, I have two different worlds I live in. So I have my music world. I've released a new album called The Code and a new video, and it's around active listening. It's about creating a deeper level of engagement through sound and through video. You can find that about that on my Facebook. My LinkedIn profile, has got all my business stuff. So the two of them are different worlds. So if you're interested in all my technical stuff and business and speaking gigs and blah, 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 LinkedIn. So LinkedIn and Facebook or YouTube, you just type my name and you'll find a whole bunch of different stuff that won't make a lot of sense.
And The Code is out now, to my understanding. So is there any other place that you want to recommend that our listening audience go to listen to this brilliant piece of work?
Yeah, so it took me 5 years to develop. And what I've done is I've hidden different codes inside the music. So it's like Da Vinci Code. And I reveal some of the codes. Like one song I've actually wrote, the words of the song are transcribed into Morse code. The rhythm guitar is playing the Morse code. So the rhythm guitar is playing the words. I've got other things like animal DNA sequences. But it all sounds very technical. But what it does is I've made it sound very pleasing listening-wise. So it takes you on a journey. It's like a film score. That is not available on any streaming platforms. It's available as a high-res download, and you can find that on my LinkedIn, the links to that, or my YouTube site. Okay. There's also previews of the album, so you can have a look and listen at what it is.
Tremendous. I would love to have you back on again to continue this conversation and to ask you some more fun questions, but for today's purposes, it was an honor to have you on. I love what you said.
It was an honor, too.
I love how you think, and you help us ordinary people get a little bit closer to being more extraordinary.
Well, everyone's extraordinary. They just don't know it in some cases.
That's great. Thanks again. Thank you very much. And please join us again, Finbar. Thanks. We appreciate you.
Thanks, guys. Thank you all.
That was Finbar O'Hanlon, and you've got to go to his website. I think the best way to do it is just look him up on LinkedIn as Finbar O'Hanlon. That's Finbar O'Hanlon, H-A-N-L-O-N. Just one of those rare individuals that we happen to read and listen to, and we're always seeking out individuals that look like polymaths that are masters of different domains, but this is the real dude. And I just love what he had to say, especially about parallel universe strategy. So, listen, folks, thanks for joining us on this show. This program is brought to you by Edward Jones Financial Advisors. And our particular advisor is Serban Maracini. You can go to Serban Maracine at edwardjones.com today to get his personal one-on-one financial advice to help you with your future. Until next time, as we always say, may you live the best version of you. Have a great week. So thanks to our sponsor, Edward Jones. They are our trusted financial advisor. And Edward Jones has been instrumental in helping us pivot our lives built around health, happiness, travel, and adding value to other people's lives. You can contact our advisor, Serban Maracini, by emailing him at Serban Maracine at edwardjones.com. And thanks again to their sponsorship of this program.